Bruce Barquette from the great firm Barquette, Epstein, Curran, Aldea, and Loterko. Great firm out of Garden City. Always good to speak to my friend, Mr. Barquette. Bruce, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Jay. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well on another snowy day here on Long Island. We can't get out of it, but hopefully. Spring is not looking that far away, especially, by the way, pitches and catches next week, by the way, I might add. So that's always a good sign. Lots happening in the world of legalities, my friend. And, you know, I wanted to get you on because there's a lot of discussion, a lot of back and forth about those who assembled January the 6th, embarking on our nation's capital, the assembling of it all, the protests going on, and then again, the prosecution of hundreds of those individuals who are so-called exercising their right to assemble and protest on January 6th. And also, you know, I wanted to go over with you the legal definition of inciting a riot. That also has been put into play. We have an impeachment trial going on with the former president, day three, to take place. Give me your take as far as what you have seen so far. You have seen arrests. We have not seen a very pretty picture. We have seen death associated with that dreadful day. Give me the Barquette take on things.
Well, so let's start from the top down, if you will, which is incitement to riot, because the big question is, did the president at that time, the then President Trump, incite to riot? And the legal definition of that is pretty clear. Urging, instigating another person to engage in a riot. Clearly, there was a riot. A riot is three or more people breaking things or injuring individuals. That occurred. So the question is, did the president incite to riot? Did he organize, promote, encourage, participate in, urge, or instigate another person? Now, an exception to that is, it can't be mere words deemed to be an advocacy of ideas or an expression of belief not involving any advocacy of acts or violence. So in simpler terms, he can talk about his ideas. He can talk about the election being stolen. He can talk about voter fraud. He can talk about all of those things, and he can talk about those in almost any terms he wants. What he can't do, and what I guess some argue that he did, is urge or instigate people to engage in acts of violence or riot. Now, I'll leave it to the listeners and to others as to whether or not his words constituted an urging, but that's where we begin with him. And the individuals who were involved range from trespass to assault of police officer, and there's obviously an investigation into the homicide of one of the officers, tragically lost his life. So the range of potential penalties goes from really mere trespass, which would carry probably under a year, to some kind of homicide, which would be quite serious, obviously as serious as it gets. One more thing about the trespass, because it was a trespass on government property where there was a person protected by the Secret Service, and in this case it was the Vice President and the Speaker of the House, that gets elevated from a mere misdemeanor to a felony with a 10-year sentence. So those people who just kind of wandered in and didn't break anything and didn't harm anybody engaged in a trespass as a felony, and they face up to 10 years in prison for that. So it is a kind of a plethora of potential charges for the individuals involved.
So it's interesting because in the legality of it all, the system that we try, that we supposedly have the greatest justice system on the planet, words are important. And, you know, when it's taken out of context and everything else, well, that becomes kind of a murky area when it comes to the world of law. And if you go back to the speech, you know, we're going to walk down to the Capitol. We're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen. And we're going to fight like hell to get our country back. We can't be weak. We're going to do it patriotically. I mean, you could certainly make the case of, you know, listen, he's holding a rally. He's holding it for some individuals who are very passionate and everything else about the individual itself, that being the former president. But, you know, what you have ongoing right now is a lot of video and everything else, and that's kind of accentuating the, you know, so-called incitement there. But words, Bruce, mean a lot as far as that's concerned. And when it's misconstrued, well, then you could have some issues as far as guilt is concerned here. But certainly, taking things out of context regarding that rally on that day, that's the impetus of it all right now.
Oh, for sure. And look, it's not just the words that matter. I mean, there's more than that. You have to prove intent. People say fight like hell or something along those lines, or let's go fight, or I'm going to fight for my client, or the team is going to fight for victory. That word, fight, is used often, and it's frequently not intended to mean any actual violence. It just means working real hard to achieve whatever goal that you've set out. Here, what the House managers have done is said that Trump's intent in using those words was to incite violence, was to incite a riot, and that they argue that we know that because of his past words and the conduct of his supporters that followed those, and his reaction afterwards that supposedly or reportedly he was pleased with what was going on at the Capitol as it was unfolding, at least at the beginning of it. And that matters as well. So you're allowed to advocate for a particular position. You're not allowed to urge people to riot. And individuals rarely, I mean, I suppose it could happen, but rarely will spell out their criminal intent explicitly. You know, no one's going to say, let's go down and break windows, smash doors, invade the Capitol, and attack police officers. That would be, you know, we wouldn't be having a discussion. It wouldn't even be up for question. But the words that were used there in the context that was used, and also taking into account other things he had said in the past that had resulted in some form of violence by some people, is being argued that he knew when he was having that rally saying, let's go down to the Capitol and let's fight like hell, that there was going to be violence. And that was his intent and that was his hope. And that when it occurred, that he was pleased about it. I'm not gonna kind of offer an opinion one way or the other. But that's the argument as it goes. It's actually quite interesting. Following the arguments yesterday and on Tuesday, it's an interesting argument. At first, I didn't think there was any chance that you could actually convict him of inciting to riot. But the House managers, I thought, did a pretty good job of spelling out how he knew what was going to happen. He knew how his supporters were going to respond, and that he was pleased when they did.
I mean, by contrast, you could certainly make the case with Bruce Marquette. By contrast, Bruce, you know, he made only a passing suggestion that the protest should be nonviolent. You know, when he said that everyone here will be marching over to the Capitol building, kind of paraphrasing here, too peacefully and patriotically, those with two words in there, make your voices heard. So march to the Capitol, be peaceful, be patriotic, but you could certainly underline that as far as presenting your case and representation here. Listen, he told you to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard as you head over to the Capitol building there. So, you know, that to me is kind of a big part of this whole thing. And again, listen, I have stated on record here that were there, and again, I don't want to get too political here, but I've stated it, so I'll state it again. You know, were there offenses made here to warrant impeachment? Yes. Should there be an impeachment trial ongoing here? No, because obviously we have other fish to fry here in this nation, so to speak. But you could certainly make the references there where, you know, you exonerate the man for telling his followers to patriotically and peacefully march over to that building.
You do. And I don't think there'll be a criminal prosecution of him in D.C. for that offense or for this riot. But the definition or what individual can be impeached from is broader than mere crime. Whether or not he can be impeached is obviously a political decision made by the Senate. And that is almost outside the realm of a legal expertise, right? You have non-lawyers judging it. You have lawyers talking about it. And everybody can have an opinion on whether or not he should be removed from office and barred from running again. Another interesting part of this is what happens to individuals who simply were there to peacefully protest, to voice their support for President Trump, who were there because they believed, for whatever reason, that the election was fraudulent and that the wrong person was installed into office, and kind of got caught up in this and walked up to the Capitol and wandered in, but didn't hurt anybody, didn't damage anything, just kind of walked in as part of this massive protest. What happens to those individuals who technically entered a place that they didn't belong, who were where there was an individual protected by the Secret Service, were now facing 10 years in prison. Now, the federal sentencing guidelines don't contemplate that they'll be in prison for anywhere near that long. But can you imagine being a professional or just a regular individual who decided to go out and protest that day, who's now facing a federal 10-year sentence where you could be convicted of a felony, and how that can impact your life?
Yeah, yes, but also, you know, listen, here's the thing with that. I mean, if you're down there to so-called peacefully protest and you see your colleagues, so to speak, entering a federal building, you know, in gear and fighting gear and masks and all kinds of, and listen, just short of hand grenades, basically, doesn't one think that there could be trouble brewing, especially if you know, you see individuals pushing, you know, smashing windows, pushing in doors, using all kinds of weaponry that they have on hand to enter a federal building. Wouldn't one know that maybe there might be some illegality going on here? No?
Absolutely. You've added some facts to it, that if you see individuals breaking into the Capitol, then obviously it's kind of like looting. You watch the people smash the windows and you're walking in and stealing stuff, you know you're not allowed in there. But the Capitol is a public place. I mean, you're allowed to go into the Capitol on some days, really most days. It just depends. It happened to be that day it was closed to the public. So how would you know that if you were at the tail end of, or even in the middle of the group? The windows are smashed, the doors are already open, there's a massive amount of people that go in. And I've seen video footage where there's police officers kind of walling off a part of the Capitol, and they're letting the protesters wander around right in front of them. So if I'm an individual that walks in at that point in time, and the door is open, there's hundreds of people already there, you walk in, and you look, and you see police officers in riot gear standing there saying, you know, implicitly, don't walk down this hallway, and then you wander around the other hallway. It is, from a lawyer's perspective, there is an interesting scale, if you will, of culpability here, where the individuals who are smashing in the windows and initially breaking, going into the Senate chamber itself and rifling through papers or desks at one end, and at the other end, the individuals who just kind of, you know, went along with the crowd and wandered in and then wandered out. Most of these individuals were asked to leave and then voluntarily left. It's not like they were dragged out in handcuffs. So it's all through this, I think. It's for most of the individuals involved, it's not so clear-cut as to whether or not they committed a crime, and if so, how they should be punished and how severely they should be punished. I don't know. For the most part, people went down there with the intent to commit a felony. I think most people went down there with the intent to protest, and then, you know, it got caught up in things. So.
Well, to me, you can kind of correlate it. You know, if you see some guys breaking into the TD Bank on 25A in Rocky Point, and you see the windows smashed, doesn't mean as a customer of theirs you go in and withdraw money at your own free will. It doesn't mean because the doors are open and everything else for entrance doesn't mean that you participate as far as what could occur, in which, you know, you took the money. You know, that, to me, I kind of correlate it the same way. Yeah, just because the windows are smashed and the doors are open and everything else to a federal building where tours were not, by the way, put in play that day, it doesn't mean you could kind of go in and take pictures and everything else. To me, you are participating. Now, depending on the severity of all, it certainly, in my eyes, again, there has to be some sort of common sense when it comes to this stuff, no?
No, of course. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to a protest in D.C. I've been to a couple over the course of my life, and I've been to D.C. on a number of occasions for work and for other reasons. The rules about where you can go, trespass, are a little I don't want to say bent, but they're a little different. I mean, I've engaged in a march from the Washington Monument up to the Capitol, and we walked down the middle of the street. Now, normally that would not be permitted. You're obstructing traffic and whatnot. But that day it was, and there was hundreds, thousands of people along with us. Now, we didn't walk into places that we didn't belong. It was a organized protest and so forth. But the rules are a little different. So if you're part of this crowd and you're walking to the Capitol, the president has said, go up to the Capitol and protest. And you just have to take it on an individual basis. What did the individual that we're talking about see, hear, know, and what can the government prove about that? if they saw individuals smashing windows and pushing back the barricades and dousing the police officers with bear spray, then clearly you're part of it. You should you should walk away from it, get away from there, get as far away as you can. But there were thousands of people that were there. I would bet a number of whom didn't see all of that violence at the forefront and simply walked in kind of the front door of the Capitol, looked around, saw some police officers, and then when they were asked to leave, walked out.
Yeah, but you can also make the case, Bruce. I mean, you aided and abetted here. I mean, when he said you walk up to the march up to the Capitol, he didn't say go inside the Capitol. You know, that could all, I mean, you really want to dissect it, you could do that too.
Walk up and, you know, stop the steal. I mean, I think it's a pretty powerful case that he intended, whether through violence or not, but he intended to stop that vote that day. He did not want the election to be certified by the Congress. That's clear, even from the phone calls that we know he made and that he had his lawyer, Giuliani, make, urging the senators after the riot took place to continue to object to the certification and to drag the process out longer. He was hoping that the day would conclude and that there was, you know, without the certification, and he'd continue to live another day to fight another day. Whether he intended to do it by violence or not, I may be an open question, but undoubtedly his intent was to stop the certification. That, I think, he said almost explicitly.
No question. And thus, you know, my reasoning, you know, that this, you know, what is going on right now is warranted. Whether it should be ongoing is another story, because, you know, he's not in office right now. But, you know, quite frankly, you know, everything he did was wrong that day. You know, he incited, he fanned flames. There's no question, you know, with the election talk and everything else. But not only that, he didn't try to stop it either when everything was ongoing until he was coaxed into getting before the camera saying, you know what, you're very special, we love you, you know what, we'll invite you to... I mean, he said everything except invite them over to Mar-a-Lago for dinner and 18 holes. I mean, pretty much.
He
showed no remorse is what I'm trying to say. Go ahead.
No, he all but, I agree 100%. We love you. You know, you're great Americans. You're patriots. But you got to go home now. Now you have to go home, right? We gave it a shot. It worked out the way it worked out, but it's over. You got to go home now. I agree. I thought it was an unbelievable event. It kind of, in some ways, it was chilling because you realize how close we came to that certification from not happening. I give a great deal of credit to Mitch McConnell. If you haven't heard his speech on the floor that day, you should go listen to it. It was an instance where an individual clearly put country above party, and one of the most partisan individuals in the country did that. And, you know, I woke up on the 7th feeling like it was a pretty good day, that the Republic had withstood the challenge. The election had been certified. We were transitioning to a new administration. That individuals from Pence to McConnell to other Republicans had, you know, done the right thing, and we were moving forward. And, you know, Trump was going to leave office, and he wasn't going to have to be dragged out by the Secret Service. So all in all, it ended up okay, but during the course of the day, it was really historic. And I, you know, just personally, I didn't realize it. I was working all day, and I came out of my office, and my whole staff is in the conference room looking at the TV, and I'm like, what's going on? And they began to describe it, and I, you know, as all of us, I couldn't believe it. It was shocking to see what was happening. We'll see. Now there's hundreds of people facing charges, and some of them quite serious. Some of these individuals are going to go to prison, and they're going to go to prison for quite a while.
No question about it. I actually thought I was looking at another round of the movie White House Down with Gerald Butler. I mean, we didn't know what was going on. I saw it on some computer screen at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever. Crazy stuff. Now, a bonus question for you while we have you, and that is, you're following the nursing home disaster, I'm sure, here in the state. You're following the lawsuits that were presented. One from the Empire Center, one for Justice for Government. FOIL Act violated, Freedom of Information Law, disclosure numbers, the undercount from the AG two Thursdays ago, 50%. You read where the justice in the case, Kimberly O'Connor, said, you know what? You got 5 days. 5 days to come clean. And guess what? 5 days was up yesterday, and they still have not come clean. Still some violations present. Where does this end up, Bruce Barquette? Do we see a stripping of executive powers? What happens? I mean, when is accountability going to be in play here? What is the next step as far as the justice system is concerned with that administration? Go ahead, sir.
Look, starting broadly, I've never seen a more disastrous handling of a crisis coupled with or followed by praise from the individual who oversees a disaster. More deaths. I think California just today with, you know, tens of millions more people just today passed New York in terms of the total number of deaths, total number. New York still is by far the leader in per capita deaths. More deaths, 10,000 or 12,000 deaths in nursing homes, which were caused probably by a direct result of the poor decision-making, a ruined economy, an individual in the executive branch who is directing things like you can have a drink at 5 of 10 in a bar, but 5 after 10, COVID comes out like some kind of vampire that shows up when it gets so dark out. It is unbelievable. Now, and Letitia James deserves a ton of credit for being a Democrat and saying, I don't care, I'm still going to investigate this, and disclosing what she disclosed about how this took place and the undercounting. How this ends, we'll see. It is quite the scandal. It involves not just money and corruption and, you know, bad decision-making. You're talking about thousands of senior citizens who died unnecessarily because of decision-making by the executive branch and then the executive branch's attempt to cover that up and violating other laws. At some point, this Emmy-winning executive is going to end up with a huge problem because people are going to wake up and say, what did we do here? You know, a year later, we have 45,000 deaths. The economy is ruined. You've controlled every little aspect of our lives. Your condescending tone with these press conferences every day telling us we can, you know, play tennis, but you have to mark your balls. You can do this, but you can't do that. And you cause these deaths, and then you lied about it, and you violated laws along the way. There could be quite a reckoning for the governor. There really could be, both politically and legally. We'll see how it all turns out.
I agree with you. I mean, you know, Letitia James. Now, listen, I was a fan of hers. I have not liked the way she has conducted herself on certain situations. I didn't like that whole NRA thing, that lawsuit, silly stuff, just to get a headline. Nor did I like the focusing in on the NYPD and everything else that has been going on in our streets. I certainly have not liked any ruling yet that she is investigating with New York American Water and that saga. I want to hear something definitive. I have not. However, she gained points with this 2 weeks ago to come out as a Democrat, to come out against this administration, to come out against the health commissioner in Deer in the Headlights Zucker. She has done a lot in my eyes. Now, listen, you can make a case. Okay, so what's on the horizon for James? Does Tish want to run for governor? Possibly. But right now, I don't care about that. What I care is, Bruce, accountability. I have not seen it. And she has now put the pressure on where they are scrambling right now, as in the case of trying to come clean. They had 5 days. They are still in violation of FOIL. Still in violation from last night. So I give points, but we're not done yet here. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the old adage, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. But here, the crime, if you will, and I use that word broadly, may have been, may not have been, but the mismanagement was resulted in the deaths of thousands of people who otherwise may not, in some cases, would not have passed away. So the crime is horrific, and the cover-up is what's going to get him in trouble. And we'll see. I don't get the sense from this particular governor that he feels kind of obligated to comply with things or fears any other branch of government because the way he's run the state. He has seized a tremendous amount of power. The legislature is as weak as one, as it could be, and he just doesn't think he has to respond to anything. So some judge someplace is saying, you got to do this or you have to do this. I can just imagine him kind of scoffing at it. I'll do what I want. So we'll see.
Listen, when you give a guy a leash as the leash that has been given, listen, he doesn't feel the need to comply. He doesn't feel that way. He's been given too much rope already. So why should he answer to that? And the fact is, folks, you know, who cares where they died? Remember that remark? That was great, right? Who cares? They died in a hospital. They died in a home. Who cares? They died on 48th Street. Who cares? It doesn't matter.
It skips over the fact that you put people with the virus in a closed facility with other people who were vulnerable, and that did not have to happen. You had a ship. You had the Javits Center. You had other places to put these individuals. The decision-making was horrific. Look, the numbers speak for themselves. Sooner or later, New Yorkers are going to wake up and say, wait a minute, we had more illness, more death, more economic hardship than any place in the country. How do we not have – how is Florida not the model for what should take place? Fewer deaths, fewer per capita illnesses, and a completely open economy. And freedom – and I say that, it sounds corny in some ways, but people can go out, wear a mask if you want, don't if you don't want to. They can go to sporting events. They can go to restaurants and bars and beaches and so forth. And, you know, DeSantis, who's a Republican, has taken a beating because he's a Republican. And Cuomo, who's a Democrat, has been praised and given an award, for God's sakes, because he's a Democrat. People aren't – these party labels are not going to survive the cold, hard facts and the illness and death that's resulted, not to mention – the economic harm. I just can't. Can you imagine being a restaurant owner being told you can open up with finally open up to 25%? Who could possibly make money? Imagine taking 20. You know, your listeners and saying to the advertisers, we're going to reduce it by 75%, and you know, still make a living, or a law firm with clients, and you know, a store with clothing, anything. It's just unbelievable what has taken place.
It is. You know what is even more unbelievable is the judge actually upheld that curfew, which I can't understand. You can't tell me 12 o'clock, 2 hours, Judge? 2 hours to allow these restaurants to function? You can't send anybody past 8:30, Bruce.
Look, the way the law is supposed to work is that the restrictions – now, this is the right to go to a restaurant is not a fundamental constitutional right, and the right to open a restaurant is not like your right to vote. So the standard is it rationally related to a legitimate government interest? Well, certainly there's a legitimate government interest in preventing the spread of COVID. Is closing restaurants at 10 as opposed to 11 or 10:30 rationally related to that goal? No, it's arbitrary. It's completely arbitrary. And shutting them down entirely was, again, I would argue, arbitrary, given the minuscule number of individuals who supposedly got sick from going to a restaurant. Out of all the individuals who were contracted the virus, only, I think it was 1.4 or 1.7% supposedly got it from going to a restaurant. And they devastated an industry that in some ways is the backbone to New York City. I don't know about you. I used to go into the city pretty regularly, and big part of the reason I'd go in, besides work, would be go to a restaurant on the weekends or even during the week. And that's just ended almost entirely a year ago with a little break over the course of the summer, and then ended again.
Well, you know, listen, when so much emphasis is on science and data, and you know, this is completely reverses course. It's ridiculous. Listen, always a pleasure, my friend. Bruce Barquette, ladies and gentlemen, part of that great firm, managing partner of the great firm, Barquette, Epstein, Curran, Aldea, and Leterco. And check out the website. Fascinating site indeed, BarquetteEpstein.com. Until next time, I look forward to it, my friend.
Great speaking to you, Jay. Take care.